Welcome to the Immutable Mindset. Join hosts Kevin Logan Jr. and Adam Posner as we uncover the captivating human element within the Web3 and blockchain technology space. Follow along as we go beyond the trends and developments, tapping into our guests' journeys, motivations, and expertise of the visionaries who are forging the future of our digital world. Tune in and be inspired by the passion, creativity, and resilience that drives these pioneers. Let their stories fuel your own curiosity and spark the desire to be part of this revolutionary movement. Welcome to the ultimate Web3 storytelling experience. Stay curious, my friends.
What's up, everybody? It is the ninth day of the month of June of 2023. You are here with Kevin and Adam on The Immutable Mindset. This is episode number 17 with Max Comparato. But before we get to that, there was some news earlier this week that we're going to highlight on, and we're going to run it by my man Kev for his take. Let's start. I'm going to flip a coin. Heads is Apple, tails is Binance. Tails, Binance. What's going on with Binance, man?
I love that. Oh my gosh, what is not going on with Binance? Well, today we got a report that the SEC is trying to get a preliminary injunction on essentially, it sounds like, all Binance assets, both in the United States and outside, which is quite huge. They are saying that Binance may have commingled customer funds with their own. They may have traded customer money.
Uh-oh.
Sounds familiar, right? Sounds a little bit like our unfortunate old friend, Scam Bankman Fraud. Yeah. But in the last couple hours, Binance has come out. They came out with a tweet and said they tried their best to come into the SEC to talk to Gary Gensler and team to register the right way, to do things the right way. And they feel like they've been bamboozled.
The old runaround.
Yeah, they said that, you know, this information.
Is there fraud happening here?
No, I was going to say this. They said that their lawyers don't even know about this. The first people that let them know were news outlets. Sounds like an interesting way for the SEC to go about things, but I digress.
What do us consumers need to keep an eye out for? Is everyone going to make a mad run to the bank? Is it going to be a run, bank run? Not even consumers. Let's talk enterprise level.
Upon initially seeing, you know, Binance itself, you know, I think it was down 9%. It's come back and called some of that back. Honestly, I don't know. I want to have an answer, but I don't know. I don't know how much power SEC can have in freezing funds outside of the US. I'm sure that any US entity is going to comply. So I'm going to guess that they'll have no problem with that. But I think at this time, the best thing to do is stay close to the news, which I'll never normally say, and pay attention, see what's happening, and make sure you keep your pulse on what's going on.
Keep an eye on it. Have you found a, before we get to Apple, have you found a solution for your cold wallet yet? You kind of not so fond on Ledger these days. What should we be looking at?
That is also another situation I'm going to let play out. They pushed back the launch of that new product that was making us a little apprehensive. I want to say back, they've had a lot of time in this space. They've generally done things what I feel like are the right way. So
we'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yep. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to listen. I still have funds in a ledger. So yep. We'll
all
see.
Right, cool. Apple, their big unveiling, their own product, new product unveiling. There's some new chips coming out for the new MacBook. There's a new MacBook 15. There's some advancements with FaceTime and some other app stuff. But what's the big one everyone's talking about, Kev?
Yeah, let's keep it real. Vision Pro, they have now released their AR glasses, and they look cool. Not gonna lie, they look pretty cool. I'm so ready for computing to be without hardware. Man, we've been using this multi-touch technology for a long time. It's gonna be so amazing to just bring a keyboard and glasses.
You don't even need a keyboard. It's just gonna be able to float in the air, man. It's gonna be projected in front of you. I've tried that before. That was like 5 years ago I tried that shit.
Amazing. And it was decent back then. Think about it now. And it's with Apple.
It was. I mean, think about the old Nintendo. Like, if you wanna go back to some of this kind of AR fun stuff, go back to the Nintendo. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, they had the headsets, they had the controllers, the tennis, the Pong. The tech is out there. And I've seen some pretty cool stuff from the AR world too. My buddy Mo, who you know, has introduced me some really cool experiences. I've seen some fun stuff that our friends over at Young and Sick are doing with some VR and AR. Yeah. stuff. It's pretty cool.
No, I was going to say, one of our former clients, Artifact. Yeah. Think about all the AR that they're going to get involved in and all the cool stuff they're going to do. No, I'm so excited for what developers are going
to
build.
But what does this mean? Let's talk on a macro level to the economy, to the space. What does that mean?
Yeah. I don't want to speak hyperbole to the mic, but it feels like an iPhone moment. It feels like an iPod moment.
Whoa, that's big.
It does, because it invigorates developers. The reality of where we're at is, you know, it's software. Software is eating the world. We're continuing to show. Hardware is going, more software. This is just another view of the marginal cost of production when it comes to technology goes to zero. Hardware is going to zero. It's going away because software is getting so darn good. Technology is getting so darn good. And I love to see it.
I love to see it too. So
I'm excited. Are you excited?
What we should be excited about is episode number 17 here with Max Comparetta. But what should people
Super.
Be excited about this episode for? What are they in store with Max here?
Max is a wealth of knowledge. Max helped launch the Salesforce Web3. Where it's a super cool platform for brands to utilize blockchains in a way that makes sense for brands. And you know, it's backed by Salesforce. So we're gonna dive deep into what that means and how that's gonna change the game for marketing, advertising, and the future of Web3. So I'm looking forward to it.
Let's do it, everybody. Sit back, relax, get involved with the Immutable Mindset, episode 17.
Let's go.
Max Comparetta. Enjoy, everybody.
Happy Friday, y'all. Happy Friday. Welcome to the Immutable Mindset. I am thrilled today to bring you today's guest, a man who's not just playing the game of digital transformation, but someone who's actually helping rewrite its rules. Max Comparetta, a force in the world of Web3, Salesforce, and digital assets. A man who journeyed from studying international affairs and Spanish at the University of Michigan, crossing borders and breaking boundaries to becoming a pivotal figure in the technology industry. A testament to his relentless drive, intellectual curiosity, and the power of having an immutable mindset. Now at Salesforce, he's breaking new ground, bridging the gap between Web2 and Web3, and crafting a seamless customer experience that is truly revolutionizing the industry. Max's work with smart contract templates, Web3 data models, collection monitoring, wallet risk scoring, which we'll get into. It's not just about creating sustainable, secure, and efficient blockchain solutions, y'all. It's about creating a future where technology serves us better, where business decisions are smarter, and where community engagement is more meaningful. Today, we're going to dive deep into the mind behind this transformation. So Immutable Mindset listeners, buckle up as we explore the future of blockchain, digital assets, and Web3 with the one and only Max Comparetta. Welcome to the Immutable Mindset, Max.
I mean, that alone deserves,
Boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
Brought to you by our good friend, Dave Shreds Halborn.
I was just about to say, I didn't even realize the whole time that you were wearing the Halborn shirt.
that's courtesy of our good friend, Dave Shred.
No. I should have known. I should have known. But damn, I mean, honestly, I just need to hire you.
Forget. I'm cheap. I'm not that expensive.
Introducing myself is like not it anymore. Yeah, I could easily undersell myself compared to Kevin. I mean,
geez. Sweet. You know, and we say this all the time, Max. I really just try to edify folks in a way that I just want your mom to be proud. And it was Mother's Day yesterday. I mean, come on. You know, shout out to the mothers. And let's do this thing. You know what? I was going to start this show one way, but now that we started all this and I'm feeling a little excitement and engagement, let's start this a little different way. So we're talking about mothers. We're talking about families. Let's bring them a little bit into Max's world. Max, I heard you recently on a podcast say something about the fact that your Italian heritage has led to the fact to you as a kid finding money all over the house. What the heck does that mean? Can you introduce us?
You got to be careful when we're talking about Italian families, Kevin, with finding money in the behind the cupboards and cabinets and the floorboards.
Let's just start there, and then we'll move this on. But yeah, just what was all that talking about DeFi and finding money in your Italian grandparents' house everywhere? What's money in the walls? What's this?
Yeah, I just have to say I don't recall.
No. It's a good way to start.
Yeah, no. It was just like my great grandparents and grandparents, tended to hide money in random spots around the house. And I don't know what it was other than to say that they had this general like distrust for like government and banks.
I like it.
And that was like some of
they were Web3 pioneers. Yeah.
Honestly, like I that's the point I was making on the other pod. It was like some of what I look at and I'm like, okay, it kind of makes sense that I got into like DeFi and self-custody.
Nah, totally. No, it's it was a good story. It was hilarious how it just came up. And yeah, just curious as you know, it felt like the original pioneers of DeFi and Web3. I was like, dang, they knew about it before then. But let's go ahead and segue that into the reason we're all here, and that's to talk about Web3. You know, it's always interesting whenever we bring guests on here to you know, we're recruiters by trade. So we dive deep into backgrounds. We like to figure out who it is we're talking to. And, you know, diving into your background on LinkedIn and figuring out how you got here. Can you tell us, you know, bring our audience a little bit more into your background and what led you to work in the technology and the software industry?
So no, I was a recruiter.
Yeah. I mean, that's key.
Go ahead, start there.
Shout out to recruiters. No, so like when I graduated from school, frankly, I really didn't know what I wanted to do yet. I found through a family connection, like someone who was hiring for a tech recruiting job in Atlanta. And I was like, well, Atlanta was somewhat established already for the family. Like my sister volunteered through Teach for America or participated as a teacher in Teach for America and got placed in Atlanta. And she was the oldest of the three of us. So she kind of picked it for everyone. Because, like, you know, once, like, I told you, we're Italian. Family's super tight. Like, once my sister went to Atlanta, it was like...
Everybody's gone.
I could, like, see my future immediately. My brother is 5 years older. My sister is 7 years older. So, like, she went 2 years later. My brother's there. I'm like...
There you go.
Or, actually, he had a stint in Gainesville. He went to law school at UF. But, like... He ended up after law school in Atlanta. And then it was like, oh man, I'm gonna be the worst kid of all time. If I'm like, you know what?
You went to University of Michigan, right?
I could do Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Ann Arbor was like a little like pop out for me. Like I like grew up in Southern Florida, like lived there until I was ready to go to school. I bounced like between Orlando and Tampa. And then wound up going to Ann Arbor for school, super cool experience. And then, was like, I'm not living in the cold and dealing with all that on a like voluntary basis. The family had kind of reestablished itself in Atlanta. So anyways, wound up in Atlanta, didn't know what I wanted to do. I opted in to go into tech recruiting and it was one of those jobs where it was like 30K base salary, uncapped commission, eat what you kill type jobs. Initially, it wasn't a full desk. It was like just recruiting, sourcing to account managers through account managers to accounts. And like I specialized in network infrastructure and later like moved over into more applications type skill sets, programming, architecture, design, all of that. I went into DevOps recruiting, but eventually like I just wanted to do something more strategic and like placing people in staffing jobs that seemed like kind of one-off jobs felt like transactional. And so I wanted to develop more of a relationship-based selling experience or like flow. And that led me to selling professional services projects, but with the same company. And then the transition to software came after like a year and a half of doing that. So, yeah.
I mean, because it looked like the transition from there to Salesforce was pretty seamless.
Yeah.
Just in terms, I mean, you're a technical recruiter. So again, like you said, you're working with the technical aspects of the role. You know, you're just dangerous enough to work with things, to talk with people. Yeah, I know how we do. But then you decide to dive deeper into the technology sphere.
100%. Yeah. I like wanted... Well, people are wild, right? Like people do wild shit.
We've seen a lot, man.
We're in the degen space. So yeah, for sure.
Well, like, yeah, I'm sure for y'all, like times two, right? But I placed developers.
And on calls.
Developers do some weird stuff to to land in some weird situation.
Yeah, no, we need a story, man.
Okay. Whoa. You can't just say that. What is that? What does that mean? Weird stuff, please. Yes. What does that mean?
I mean, let's just say this. Like, so we
go ahead. Weirdest thing. Go.
Once you play someone, in at least in my old world, that might be similar to yours, maybe different. They're on your payroll, right? At the company.
Yes.
Right. So they're really working for you. You manage them, all that, right? So you do a lot of the hiring and firing, like pretty much, because they're working for you again on your payroll. We used to pay weekly, and so I had developers that I placed in jobs that would do the most inappropriate shit and like be in the weirdest positions and situations. So like there was one time, speaking of like hiring and firing, I had to go and let someone go from that was on site with an airline client in Atlanta. And I walked in and they were like, are you here to pick up, you know, person's stuff? And I was like, yes, that's exactly why I'm here. And they were like, oh, okay. Hey, let's walk him back. And I was just like,
creep.
That's so interesting. Why you're so in seeing my reaction to whatever this is. And I get there and it's like straight up a desk with like shelves with, I don't know, man, like 100 Beanie Babies, all just like turned in a creepy way towards the person's chair.
Yeah. All right. Just interesting. Just cool. Interesting. Yeah, just interesting. Interesting.
Just weird, you know, just weird stuff.
Lots of questions.
In recruiting. And, oh, I had to move states. That's why I'm in New York now. It's wild. It's a wild story. Anyways, I can't talk about everything legally.
We understand.
No.
Seamless transition into Salesforce. Yes. Sorry.
Totally seamless transition into Salesforce. I wanted to go somewhere. My point that I was trying to make is I wanted to go and sell something that was like a little bit more predictable in how it behaved. Like people are totally unpredictable.
Good point.
At the same time, predictable, but you know, certain people, once you get to know them, but unpredictable, generally speaking. And so I wanted to
technology get minus ChatGPT AI, very predictable. Agreed. Go.
Exactly. So I felt software was a safe space to crawl into after recruiting. So I wound up selling CRM licenses to like companies that had more than one, obviously, but fewer than like 50 total employees. And so it was a totally different experience, right?
Definitely.
SOW, big professional services contracts being sold to Fortune 50 companies like Coke and Delta and Home Depot and WorldPay and
whole different sales cycle,
et cetera, to selling CRM licenses to SMBs that may not, you know, think or imagine at all being able to afford CRM from Salesforce. That was a tough transition for sure.
You start really kind of on the sales side as an account executive, right?
Yep. So I did that for 3 years, technically. Actually.
Through different roles throughout the process. Where was it? What was it? Was the kind of the point where you started to see this blockchain thing? I know you talk about your kind of your own process learning 2018, 2019. I believe one of your friends introduced you to it. Was there anything within Salesforce that was introduced to you, or was that just straight up your own discovery, your own learning, all that?
Was it on the radar of like Salesforce Trends? Are there like weekly newsletters to keep employees kind of in the loop of what's happening, like latest and greatest? None of that shit, you would think.
Not before I got involved. And even now, like we don't send out like a mass newsletter, but we have like a large Slack group that we use for general comms, and like we put out regular messages.
So then like a lot of us, it was your own rabbit hole that got you into this.
It was personal passion outside of work since before I even started at Salesforce. And my cousin had introduced me to it just as like an investment. And then I later discovered DeFi and, you know, like lending and yield farming and staking. And I like really appreciated that for what it was, just that, like not all the hype and like just that capability is miraculous to me.
What about those learnings or those, that early, you know, experience, what built that passion to continue on and get you to, you know, to what we're going to be talking about here, the Web3 piece that you've co-founded on with Salesforce?
Honestly, like I joked earlier, the whole like self-custody concept or notion resonated with me. Like
100%.
Yeah, like it was super powerful to me to be able to hold my own like assets and value. And of course, like you can go get money from a bank and you can like put it on my coffee table. I could probably put all my savings on my coffee table, but like, you know, like you can do that. You can hold value, but like to securely hold value and have it be truly like immutable and like protected, and then have the freedom of choice, true freedom of choice.
Yeah.
Because without holding something and custodying something, you don't really have like true freedom of choice. You're like asking for someone's permission to do something with your stuff. It hits so deeply for me. And then when you see situations where trust is abused or destroyed or deteriorated to some degree, it just makes you not question at all, like your kind of, I don't know, conviction in the future of things being driven in self-custodied ways, you know?
I'm sure that's why grandparents put money all over the house.
100%. Money and coffee tins. Yeah.
That puts that in such a whole new perspective. Like, I didn't grow up with any of that, but hearing you tell that story, like, I mean, we were joking about it in the beginning, but like very sincerely, like almost goosebumps, because that's literally what we're going through right now. It's just, we have technology to back us up and do it in a different way so that we don't have to hold the whole value in our own hands, and we can figure out ways to kind of decentralize and create walls in between risk and not increasing risk towards us. In terms of you being at Salesforce, again, you go through the sales, the account executive. There was a point of which I was looking at your background. You do go-to-market strategy and product in the emerging technology space. At what point are people at Salesforce starting to have those conversations? Matter of fact, is anybody, you know, you mentioned maybe nobody's curious. Were you the one to bring this to the forefront? Are you the one that's evangelizing this, that's taking the initiative and telling them, hey, we need to talk about this Web3? Or was there something internally that happened where you just got to meet somebody or something happened? Just curious.
So it's kind of both.
Okay.
There was a product group that was focused on developing a blockchain application in 2017, 2018. That was called Salesforce Blockchain, and it was built on Hyperledger Fabric, and it was a PBFT consensus model blockchain on the back end that, or instances of those essentially, like could be spun up on the fly to enable brands, companies, institutions, whether they're educational or otherwise, to spin up their own little permission networks and invite other people into those networks. And they could say, oh, I'm an educational system. We're a system. Right now, it's really hard to share documents and exchange information seamlessly. We're looking for papers and we're doing this and, you know, we're hunting this down and that down, and it's hard to share it and get it in the right format, all that. This solves for that because it gives someone who doesn't know jack shit about technology the ability to configure and create and spin up and deploy their own little public ledger, like semi-public ledger, and database. That's a powerful concept. So there was somebody who had worked on that, developed that technology, but failed in bringing it fully to market. And it got to like pilot, and there was some pilot traction, not much. It kind of fizzled out. And the thing is, like, building consortiums is hard. Like, that is like lesson number one and probably lesson two from that process. And I wasn't involved then. Like, I was still in my account executive days as this was all happening. And there was a guy named Adam Kaplan who was driving all of that with an architect named Prithvi Padmanabhan. They disbanded and like went into different parts of the company after that got shut down. Slack acquisition, funds were moving around, getting focused on integration, all that.
Gotcha.
They started talking again at the end of 2020. And at the beginning of 2021, Adam was at this random forced virtual happy hour that happened, like during the pandemic, like the ones where you just get, I mean, you guys were in a startup maybe, or at your own company recruiting, so you maybe didn't force each other to drink with each other online, but like this was like a thing, let me tell you, in corporate America. So anyways, Adam gets on one of these with my then boss, or actually, ironically, my then boss's colleague, or like counterpart from my org. And he starts, you know, chalking it up with this person. He tells them about an idea that he had for this like marketplace that he was considering developing outside of Salesforce. They were also chatting about what we could do inside of Salesforce with regards to NFT technology, blockchain technology, because he still had it in his mind that, you know, like he wanted to do something in that space and product development at Salesforce.
And this is the beginning stages of the talks for what you guys are doing now? Yep. Okay.
100%. So that was April 22nd of 2021.
Oh, in the hype of the hype.
First call with him. And he had sent me like a 16-page business document, which was actually for a totally different concept for an NFT marketplace. And I was like the person that he was told to consult because like I knew different things that would be useful to him. Like
right.
I consulted some blockchain startup. I had experience selling Salesforce products. I had experience implementing Salesforce products, like building demos and prototypes.
You could put a lot of the threads together for them.
Products. Yeah. So he was like, you're like one guy I can talk to and learn all this different
stuff. Yep.
And so that's how I got introduced to him. And at the end of the call, he asked for feedback. I gave him a ton of feedback. We dropped off the hour long call or however long after. And like moments later, I'm back on a call with our architect, now architect, but then like just a guy that was like sitting mostly quiet on the call. And at the end talked about the technical details. That's like the guy that I typically connect with at most places. It's like a guy who's technical, who talks to people all day who aren't technical.
They know how to make shit happen, right? They put it together and they make things happen. They know the technical side of it. They're listening to all the calls. They're understanding the marketing, the product mix, the UI, the UX, and they're just the intersection. But they may not have the loudest voice in the room.
Well, and as recruiters, we see that all the, like you've seen that in your past too, I'm sure, Max, where you get that developer that is the smartest mother effer, knows it all, but has no business logic and has no idea why he's developing this for that, right?
Yes. But I mean, like this architect, he is amazing in terms of understanding business logic, all this stuff, right? And Adam is a pure business guy with some technical background. Adam sold his company to Salesforce in 2010. That was the first Salesforce consulting practice ever sold to Salesforce. And then Adam ran professional services.
Boom, there you go. That makes tons of sense why he would be your guy in Salesforce to make this all happen. He gets it.
He is the man when it comes to one, networking internally, having political capital, building his brand so that we could make these moves. He did all of that for us. And when I came in later, it was to riff on concepts and ideas and applications for NFT technology. And that was where the idea was born, out of some of these follow-up conversations.
The Immutable Mindset is proudly supported by MetaIntro, the professional resume wallet for Web3. The multi-chain custodial wallet holds proof of employment, proof of skill, proof of education, replacing the old PDF resume. Adjacent to the project, MetaIntro runs a massive Discord community dedicated to Web3 jobs. Around 4,000 opportunities are posted in the community every month. For more information on MetaIntro, head to www.metaintro.com. That's metaintro.com, or follow us on Twitter at MetaIntro. Thanks.
So real quick, Max, do me a favor for my audience. Give us a high level of what this Web3 studio is so we can stop talking esoterically and they can understand kind of what cool shit you guys are doing.
Yeah, so there's like two things that you have to understand.
Okay.
That are tricky. One is the Salesforce Web3 studio is literally a super, super small team of like me, my boss, and like two to three other individuals who those other individuals are like volunteers. Like they have full-time jobs. there is like myself and my boss who are fully dedicated to this studio. And then we have an extended group of people who are incredibly passionate about Web3 and want to help and see it succeed. And they are volunteering their hours, energy, effort, time to helping progress the effort at the company.
I really don't want to cut you off. I'm sorry, but I have to ask, is Salesforce, like, are they 100% backing? Is it because they're not all in? They just want to see how it runs? Like,
oh, yeah. No, I mean, look, so, I mean, like, the reality is we had a blockchain product before, right?
Okay, okay,
it
okay.
It failed when it went to kind of, like, commercial phases, in essence. Like, when we went to monetize, it was difficult to monetize. Like, in a consortium, who pays for what? Who gets to say who is and isn't added? Gets these rights.
So this is a, is this shit going to work kind of a deal?
Dude. Yeah, absolutely. Salesforce has to gauge the commercial viability of this solution and then weigh its investment in that over other things. I mean, like, even for everything's opportunity cost analysis, like marketing right now, you know, you have a higher yield on marketing things that involve or are adjacent to AI than marketing Web3 stuff.
Oh, so definitely.
Even if we have like a great marketing story to tell for a Web3 program right now, we might opt not to tell it at the moment. We can store it, prepare it, kind of archive that story and be ready, which we are doing, like, but it's opportunity costs.
No, totally. So let's go back real quick to just, cause I cut you off and I apologize. Just talking about the product at the high level. So, you know, just in terms of, you know, how you guys are creating that seamless experience for Web2 to kind of come over to Web3 and for brands to start to touch Web3 and play with it. Yeah. What are you guys doing for them?
Cool. So I was just clarifying.
No. Yeah. Perfect.
Web3 Studio team, Salesforce Web3. So team, not product. Salesforce Web3 is the way that the product is referred to. But in reality, there are two products within Salesforce Web3. So the term Salesforce Web3 is really just used to collectively refer to those two products. The two products are NFT management and Web3 Connect. NFT management is a no-code smart contract creation tool. It makes configuring a smart contract and deploying a smart contract as easy inside of Salesforce as it is to like create a contact record.
It should be a logical product, right? That should be something that should be integrated regardless. Yeah.
100%. That's exactly what it is, actually. When you create it in the system, you actually are creating product records. So each NFT is represented by a product record in the CRM. And then when you sell it through Commerce Cloud, if you sell it, right? Like, you might just distribute it and airdrop it, which you can do from any backend, right? Including Salesforce. But if you want to distribute it through a front end and actually sell it or have someone claim it, you can do that through our Commerce Cloud product, if it's in terms of selling it, or you can distribute it through any type of site builder or front end experience, and we can still power it through the back end. So that's what NFT management is. It's super cool. It organizes the hell out of what you're doing, because right now I know what people are doing and it's not organized. What you can do inside of Salesforce is have like a record of the collection itself. And then off of that, be able to see every wallet that interacts with it as a smart contract, every token that's minted from it, all of that data timestamped, dropped right into Salesforce for you to have in reference in reports, and dashboards, automation rules and workflows, all that type of stuff to drive like unique, personalized customer experience and like touch points that feel human, even if they're automated.
No, I love that. I love that. It's. I mean, you're truly trying to help these brands create innovative experiences leveraging this new technology. Well, let's get to it. Are there any cool brands or interesting entities that we can talk about that are leveraging this technology and any cool ways that they're leveraging it that we can talk about?
Yeah, so I'll talk about what I can talk about.
And please.
There's definitely stuff I can't, that I'm super excited about, maybe more excited about.
You just can't talk about the stuff that you're super excited about. We get it.
You could drop hints. It's okay.
We saw what Diageo with Crown Royal. And I'll say this, like, we've learned a lot over time and things have evolved, as you've seen, like, pretty quickly in the NFT space. Like, our first project with Scotch and Soda, we, like, only enabled MetaMask, only enabled desktop minting, didn't have mobile, didn't enable, like, fiat or wallet creation services with, like, email inputs, for example, like Magic or CrossMint, whatever. Now, like, what we're doing with Diageo, I think, is really cool because they're one of the more progressive brands when it comes to imagining a future where they truly do incorporate NFT technology into their existing business strategy and make it better for the reasons that Web3 makes it better or can make things better. And they're thinking about it very, very programmatically, in the sense that they're thinking about governance models for their international brand and thinking about governance models at, like, regional levels. All right, in a mayor, if we have brand managers that do this, this, and this, what rights and permissions should we give them relative to NFTs in our world, like with our IP? And their digital asset management system might be connected to Salesforce. And that might be the system from which you pull assets to tokenize and then distribute. And so you're in essence distributing IP. So who do we want to give the rights to distributing IP to? And how do we want to update our terms of service to include, you know, covering scenarios where we're distributing IP? And they're thinking very advanced, I think, about integrating that into their business and fractionalization concepts of real world asset tokenization. They're great. I'm excited about what they'll do.
Yeah, it sounds like they're actually leveraging, like, the technology of it and not the gimmicky parts that I feel like we overemphasize in crypto Twitter and other places.
Look, they're still doing the stuff that's, like, more engagement farming, if you will. But it's just that they understand the nuance of that alone, like, that there are strategies that are about engagement and about reach and about getting people into the ecosystem. Then there are others that are more like targeted, limited run, low supply, hitting a certain group of customers or a certain segment.
For sure.
High value, high net worth individuals and stuff. And that's okay too.
Well, it feels like we're still in this place where it's still a money making game. So it still makes sense to have those front facing things. So yeah, I know they had the NFT last year with Crown Royal, and I believe they had, like, a military member, like they did something for military members within it. Right. So there's still ways to do that.
Yep, for every NFT minted, they packed, like, a care package and sent it to an active duty military.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, yeah. But then in the background, you're figuring out ways to utilize the technology the way that it should be. I think it's interesting what you just said, because that empowers your employees in a whole another different way. Again, it's utilizing the actual technology to decentralize not just ownership, but to decentralize kind of power, choice, and ability to have impact in real time. That's what it is. There you go. It's an ability to have impact in real time, and then it kind of be measurable, right? So at corporate entities, like, that's what I hear so much about, you know, again, recruiters, all these people. Like, how do you measure impact? That seems like an interesting way, not to get on a tangent here, that they could do that and get metrics back on it and really start to do that. Anyways, not to, again, get on a significant tangent. One of the things that this is going to do is, you know, again, utilizing the technology for literally what we're talking about, is it's going to allow these brands and these businesses to not only make better business decisions, but to engage their community in just, like, a whole different way, a more immersive way that maybe people don't know or don't understand. Again, not to get back, but are just curious. I'll bring it back to this. I know you talked early. I think Coca-Cola and some other real cool entities are using it. Is anybody using it for community engagement in any way that's cool? Or are you reaching out to organizations to talk about ways that they can utilize it for community engagement?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, the community engagement, I guess it's how you've, like, decided to build and identify community. Like, these are the things that it quickly enables you to do by putting making something available and attaching some type of brand value to it. You know who wants the brand value. It's hard because, yeah, to your point, there are people who speculate on even brand value, like even like something that's like, oh, you can exchange this for X.
Nike shoes do it all the time.
Yeah, they'll go nuts on this stuff. Like, and the really cool thing, what I'm excited about, is there's finally enough data, or starting to be enough data, for fruitful analysis to be conducted on blockchain transactions and wallet activity, to be able to identify someone's like genuine affinity for something. And then since those some things are being classified as well in the process, so like this token's from this collection and was purchased at this time, and I'm categorizing this collection this certain way, this token a certain way based on its traits, metadata, utility attached to it, all these things. And I'm categorizing timestamps based, like basically then that's helping me build cohorts, segments, and effectively have a direct targeting strategy.
No, yeah, no, that's powerful.
That's what it is ultimately about.
You have to transact. They have to figure out ways to get this data from the different blockchains. I mean, I know it goes through wallets. Everybody's using 17 different wallets. Everybody has 77 different burner accounts. So I can't even imagine, like, really just thinking like how these brands have to figure out ways to get data for their customer without building your own platform, like what Odyssey and Starbucks have done, so that you can, you know, have it all in house. I think that's what the future of blockchain and Web3 is in the CRM and customer engagement, and then you using those immersive interactive experiences and again, leveraging the technology it should to create that peer-to-peer relationship that you have. I mean, literally today, Nike.swoosh is releasing their digital collectible, and I've been trying to get into that website all day, and it is, right? Talking about brand identity, brand equity. There's one, right? Nike and shoes. That's one that people will show up for and show up for and show up for no matter what, because it's the brand. And a lot of this goes towards real world tokenization. It's something that like I'm supremely curious about, something that we talk about a lot here. And I know something that you're interested in. Are you familiar with BlackRock, Larry Fink?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, that yearly letter, right? The most important probably financial letter in the United States. This last one, he said, all assets are going to be tokenized and on the blockchain. You've been involved in real world asset tokenization. Real quick, can you just explain to our audience what that is and how it creates real world impact and just what you're seeing and what you guys are doing?
It's GS1 that does the universal product IDs, and everyone uses it. Everyone, Walmart, everyone, right? They all use GS1. It's like a way to have a global registry, product registry, essentially. Real world asset tokenization is going to exist and become a reality, or I guess a future where all real world assets have a record on chain. Basically, there's a record of all real world assets and products on chain. That will happen because it's easier to track things that way. Like I think people overcomplicate the reasons why things are going to happen.
Yes.
It's simply easier to track. And that's just one thing. It's easier to trace it back to its point of origin and see who manufactured it and its parts, to see who had a interaction with its parts or its whole. And that helps with like auditing and QA and liability mediation with all of these things. And so really it's like products today have serial numbers. Serial numbers help us track things. This will be a way for us to track things more universally. And make it easier for us to transfer something from Kevin to Adam and from Adam to Max.
Yep.
It's a lot easier to transfer a house or 10 kilograms of gold, by token, represented by a token, moving electronically or digitally on a distributed ledger than it is to, that's accessible by a million different front-end interfaces, the same backend, than it is to access a million backends and a million front-ends into those million backends. And that's why that's definitely going to happen. I have no doubt in my mind that that's the reality we're going to be
with. Definitely, definitely. And, you know, a lot of that goes towards, you know, these brands, these organizations owning a hell of a lot more of the customer journey in Web3. I know this is something that you've spoken on before, but, you know, up to about this point, and I hope your product really helps with this, so much of the whole process has been outsourced to consultants or to degens like us that you know, have gone down those rabbit holes and done all these things. I want to end it on a question. You were talking at NFT NYC about how brands win with NFTs. And you were discussing how brands have been growing up with Web3. And again, like I said, at the beginning of their journey, they wanted to outsource and offload all the risk of the process, not hold any keys, not hold any coins, not hold the CRM. But now you're seeing them embrace that. And in fact, you literally are bringing that internally to what you guys are doing. So one of the things you said that I wanted to kind of get your comment feedback on is brands are starting to own more of the customer journey in Web3. What does that mean for the future of Web3 and what we're trying to build here?
Yeah, so I would say owning the customer journey, interacting directly with digital assets are two different things. I'll clarify that. You can own more of the customer journey and not have greater exposure to digital assets. And that is definitely the truth of what I see most often with brands. Brands are wanting to take on more of the, I guess, the responsibility for engaging directly with the communities that these types of things can attract. They want to engage with these communities, and they want to engage with consumers who are engaging with digital assets, but they don't per se want direct exposure to digital assets themselves. And so what they're often looking for is a combination of solutions that have them interacting with these communities, creating assets and distributing them to these communities, but literally taking the actions themselves to do these things, like to create smart contracts, to create NFTs. To publish and deploy smart contracts and airdrop NFTs. They want to be able to take these actions and program these actions within the customer journey. However, they want custody to be handled by a third party most often. So what I'm working on is truly, like, in my opinion, the most thoroughly integrated existence of Web 2 and Web 3. And I am trying to identify the path from completely outsourced custody to levels of self-custody that brands are willing to assume based on their legal or otherwise affinity for risk and exposure or requirements. And so it's a tough process. I'm getting it handed to me every day, like running into roadblocks left and right. But we've identified exactly the two things that brands want and need to be able to participate in Web3 without having direct exposure to crypto assets. And I'm working actively on solving for that
problem. Oh, yeah.
And those two are, just real quick, you got to say it.
No, man, that's my sauce.
Oh, man.
I'm kidding.
All right.
I'm kidding.
Bring us home, man.
You said that's my sauce. Well, that was pretty saucy. No, Max, you know, sincerely, no, like seriously, given your background, you have the technical, the sales, the marketing, like you have the right mindset and the right capabilities, the right intellectual framing to be able to steward this. I think what you're doing is honestly, like very fucking sincerely, one of the most important things that's happening in Web3 that people are not talking about or maybe don't know. Crypto Twitter so fascinated with meme coins and shit coins and other things that I think they're forgetting the most important aspects of what the hell we're doing. And that's connecting the rest of the world to Web3. And you're doing it in the right way, dude. So I wanted to bring you on here to really praise you on that, to discuss a little bit of that. And I really appreciate you, you know, giving us some time. I definitely would love to bring you back on for maybe like a live show on LinkedIn, get some more engagement from folks that, you know, once this product gets out there a little bit more and people start getting more used to it, definitely want to get you on. But anyways, with that said, thank you again so much for joining us today, Max. Please check out Salesforce new Web3 product available now. It is at www.salesforce.com/products/web3/overview. Please let the people know where to find you on social and anything else that you're working on that they should know about.
I will drop a comment for everybody, but best way to reach me is on LinkedIn. I pay attention to Twitter sparingly because of my DMs look like a nightmare in Twitter. I keep them cleaner on LinkedIn.
Totally understand.
Feel free to hit me there. Thank you guys for having me on the show. This was awesome.
Dude, thank you so much. Thank you. And to everyone listening at home, really appreciate you. Everybody have a fantastic Monday. I hope it's nice and shiny where you're at. Thanks for joining us on the Immutable Mindset. Follow us on all our social media channels at Immutable Show. Subscribe, comment, and network. We'll catch you next week for more. Take care.
That's how we do it.
Stay curious, y'all. Thank you for listening to The Immutable Mindset. We appreciate you for joining us. Please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Immutable Show. Subscribe, comment, and network. And catch us next week for more. Take care, folks.